Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Good to go when you are, good sir.
I'm ready. I wonder if
and so is Jay.
I was just going to say, Jay Siebold, not messing around at all.
Not at all. Hello, I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. It is August the 2nd.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Come back to the pod if you're a first-time listener. Welcome if you're like a many-time listener. Well, welcome to you, too. Anyway, today is Wednesday, which means we're going to do some news, some smiles, and then get out of your hair and let you get on about your day. So we'll jump right in. Kimberly, what do you got?
I got two. First of all, it's just a link to the Department of Justice's indictment against former President Donald Trump, and it's 45 pages of glory. I believe it's 45 pages.
It is.
I don't need to talk about it. I can't really add much more to it than the many, many, you know, billions of gallons of ink and digital imagery of letters that have been spilled and talking heads on television. But I would encourage folks to read the indictment and go to the original source and the evidence presented and read it, because this is an important moment for our country, and I think it's worth looking at the original document. So we will have a link to it on our show notes. So that's all I have to say about that.
Hard agree.
Yeah.
You bet.
Okay. The other one I have is what I thought was a really fabulous piece in The New Yorker about climate emotions, how we deal with our emotions related to climate change, which we've been doing a lot on the show the last couple of weeks, and the stress and anxiety and the feelings of hopelessness that come with the, you know, sense that it's bad, it's getting worse, and it feels like it's hard to do anything about it at this point. And it's an interesting piece exploring sort of how we deal with these feelings, how different we process these feelings in the West when it's, as one of the people quoted in the article said, it's hard to make decisions about, you know, dealing with climate change from an air-conditioned room.
Mm-hmm.
And how different it is for us as we process it compared to in parts of the world where people are already dying from the heat, from extreme weather, who are actually seeing their communities sink into the ocean, and the sort of privilege it is to be able to sort of stop thinking about it for a minute. But there was an interesting passage in here, and I'll just read some of it. They were talking to a climate therapist. There are actually therapists now that are that are trained and are training others to help people deal with anxiety related to climate change. And it says, climate anxiety differs from many forms of anxiety a person might discuss in therapy. Anxiety about crowds or public speaking or insufficiently washing one's hands, because the goal is not to resolve the intrusive feeling and put it away. It's not a keep calm and carry on approach. Thank you, Yuki. It's not a keep calm and carry on approach, said this therapist. When it comes to climate change, the brain's desire to resolve anxiety and distress often leads either to denial or fatalism. Some people convince themselves that climate change is not a big deal or that someone else will take care of it. Others conclude that all is lost and there's nothing to be done. And Davenport, this therapist, pushes her clients to aim for a middle ground of sustainable distress, becoming more comfortable with uncertainty, remaining present and active in the midst of fear and grief. And I think that's a good solution. Remain present and active in the midst of fear and grief. And also elsewhere, you know, they recommend that if you're having these feelings, you know, can you decide that here's the chunk of the day that I'm going to process these feelings, or chunk of the week, I'm going to deal with these feelings at this time, and accompany that with some action of doing what I can do. And, you know, such as, you know, throw a cat out the window.
Yeah, well, that's all different
thing. Kidding.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a good piece. It's a little bit of a long read. And it's actually from back earlier in July. I just happened to stumble across it today. But, yeah,
it's totally
that's my thing.
Totally interesting. So two thoughts before I move into my item-ish thing. Number one, speaking of fear and anxiety, and your admonition for people to just read the indictment, it is well written. It is a story well told. But here's my fear and anxiety about that. And it was prompted by an interview on Morning Edition this morning, an interview that it might have been Leila Fadel, might have been I don't even know, with Sarah Longwell, who's a Republican strategist, talking about how little difference this indictment makes to Trump voters. And I don't know what to do with that.
I mean, I may have told you the story about being in a taxi once, or an Uber, with a guy who was hell-bent on convincing me that January 6th was not that bad. Nobody was really injured. The only person to die as a result of it was the woman who was shot. And that everybody was blowing it out of proportion. And I kept pointing him to evidence after evidence after evidence of, you know, he was like, you got to believe, listen to the you know, the police were on their side. And I'm like, there are all these police testifying that they were being attacked and there's video. And finally I said to him, I said, what piece of information from what source would make you believe differently than you do? And he was like, to be honest, nothing at this point.
Right. Right.
And that was hard for me to hear.
Right.
But what I took from that is that's a lost cause. So what else can we do? Right? What else can we do? Either give information to people who are still willing to hear it, or if there is going to be a cohort of people who refuse to believe the danger to the democracy and refuse to acknowledge the evidence, and the same thing with climate change, what can we then do to counteract that? What can we do as engaged citizens of the democracy to protect what's left?
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And
so,
I think that's what we got to do.
Okay. So, look, I grant you and in many ways admire your what can we do about it instead of attitude, which is in direct contrast to mine, which is, God, this is just so boogered up, and, you know, all that other stuff, right? We differ on that. But look, it's entirely possible that the Republican nominee for president, by the time the nominating conventions come around, will be a convicted felon, or if not convicted, then certainly deep in trial on two or three or however many of the 78 counts.
Probably four at that point.
Right, exactly. And look, we're still short one looming indictment, and we're already at 78 felony counts. But assuming Donald Trump is the president, the Republicans' presidential nominee, it is a toss-up as to whether he gets elected or not. And as I've said before on this podcast, it was somebody on Pod Save America, either Tommy Tommy Vitor or Dan Pfeiffer, who said, you know, this presidential elections are determined by fewer people than fit, like in the Big House at the University of Michigan, which is a football stadium, for those of you who don't know, which is just perilous. And if you have half the country, give or take, that believes Donald Trump should be the president of the United States, what? What do we do with that?
I don't think it's half the country. I think it's the majority of Republican primary voters, which is what we're really talking about.
Well, they for sure believe so. But the guy did get 70-something million votes, and Biden got 80-something million. And let's not go down that little rabbit hole. But tens of millions of people. And what the bleepity bleep 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 do we do with that? That I can't process that. Truly, I can't. And I'm a guy who believes in democracy and informed citizenry. And look, in all of my speeches that I give, I have a whole riff about how if you listen to Fox News, if you read the New York Times, you have to read the Wall Street Journal editorial page. If you watch MSNBC, you got to watch Fox News. But that is breaking down. And I honestly don't know what to do with that.
I will, call me Pollyanna. I'm going to try to keep picking something to give me hope in the world. You are starting to see more Republicans, granted they're never Trumpers, start to push Republican donors to pull money back from Republican candidates running for president who don't really have a chance to beat Trump in the primaries. So Mitt Romney's come out and said this. Some folks in the Senate, I believe, are getting on board, where they're telling Republican donors, stop giving money to primary candidates who don't have a real chance to win. And by X date, stop giving them money so that we can really mount a meaningful challenge and have a candidate who is not Trump, because if it's Trump, we're going to lose, because that's what they think. And I think that there are more of those conversations happening amongst establishment Republicans than we think. And I'm going to latch onto that.
All right. Fair enough.
Pull that one from the archives.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the dark
place. I love it when J.C. Gold is in charge. All right. So I'll tell you what. Let's just move to smiles, because I didn't, my other one's a climate one, and who needs more bad news and all that crap? All right. Go ahead. What do you got?
Mine is today's dose of perhaps AI won't just destroy us, because I'm trying to find these moments. Again, my effervescent optimism. There's a story in Politico, the European Union version of Politico, that AI has improved breast cancer detection rates by 20%. It is a study in Sweden showing the potential of using artificial intelligence in mammography. And I think that's great news. I'm happy to start seeing applications of AI that aren't just purely to make, you know, tech companies more money,
sure.
or to, you know, destroy the world or whatever. And this could potentially, if these findings hold up, I think that could potentially save people's lives and scale in places where there aren't as many doctors,
right.
you know, to be able to do these detections. And I think that's fantastic.
I think medicine is ripe for, as many fields are, but medicine in particular is ripe for disruption by AI, radiology in particular. I think if you're in medical school now,
you just have to stare at
exactly,
pictures.
Exactly. If you're in medical school now and you're thinking about being a radiologist, and look, if somebody out there listening thinks I'm wrong, tell me. But I think radiology is not long for the medical specialty, because computers are going to be doing it, you know?
Yeah. And anything where you have to, like, even look at, like, blood samples under a microscope
and look for things. Right.
Like, those
pathology and all
things.
That jazz. You bet. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I'm glad you knew the word for it. All right. So that's what I got.
Okay. All right. So here's mine. This one came across my Twitter feed, and it is from – and yes, I was actually on Twitter, because I'm not going to call it X.
But don't you mean X?
No, I don't mean X. I will not. I refuse.
It is still Twitter.com.
That's true. So this is from April the 5th, 2023. It's a presentation to the 8th Annual Planetary Defense Conference in Vienna, Austria. And it's a slide deck titled Prospects for Future Human Spaceflight Missions to Near-Earth Asteroids. And this is NASA laying out how they could get up to a near-Earth asteroid and, like, dock on it and send people there. It's a crew of three, right? It would be 152 days. It would be a departure date of give or take 2039. They've got an asteroid in mind, 2001 FR85. It's about 20 to 85 meters large. It's crazy. It's wild. They're talking about like transferring propellant in low Earth orbit and then boosting it up to high Earth orbit and then going after this asteroid. We'll put it on the show page. It's very dorky, but it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool.
But they've got like a picture of the spaceship, I guess, that they want to use, and a starship. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then there's this wonderful like graph of like how they would get everything up there. That's so cool. And I love this. the Starship Propellant Depot remains in Earth orbit. Like, we are living in sci-fi.
We're going there. We are going there.
I love
it.
It'd
be so cool.
I'm happy.
Sign me up, man.
It would.
Sign
I would totally
me
do
up.
It. You know, I'm ready to retire on the moon.
Totally.
I'm here for it.
I'm
ready.
There you go.
And despite you saying I'm too old, I still believe it's a possibility because they're going to need old people on the moon to like see what happens to you
old
when you age
on the
moon.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're going to want to see what happens to people as they age in, you know, low gravity and in all those spaces. And I volunteer as tribute, man.
I love that. Get us out of here.
All right. That's it for us today. We are going to be back tomorrow. Please keep sending us your comments and questions. We're at 508-UBSMART, or you can write us at makemesmart@marketplace.org.
A volunteer's tribute, man. Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Today's program was engineered by Jay Siebold. I see him across the glass there. Our intern is Niloufar Shabandi.
Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Marissa Cabrera. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
Bang Zoom.
Bang Zoom.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.